Hello, everybody, and welcome to the end of the year. We're recording this ahead of time, so if we say Tuesday or Wednesday, ignore the days of the week.
Or if like something really hectic happens in the world of what we're going to talk about and we don't mention it,
that's why.
Yeah, we've probably doomed the world to like something like Trump gets impeached or whatever. We'll see.
That's not doom.
Well, we're going to talk
anyway. Well, okay, so this year has gone on forever and has flown by at the same time.
The years stop coming and they don't stop coming.
It's going to be one of those podcasts, I think.
It really do be like that.
Okay, so Clinton's rattling off some of his favorite memes of 2018
That's an eternal meme.
But this is what we're doing now this week, is we're going to go over some of our favorites and least favorites of 2018.
Yes.
Not in that order. Some of us will have some things that we were our favorites and things that weren't our favorites. So strap in. It's going to be a bit of a long one. Get yourself a nice cup of coffee. I was going to say cocoa.
Okay, Brad.
Then I got like coffee, alcohol, cocoa.
Oh my gosh, just stop talking, okay, dude. That went real bad for you.
Right, let's just dive into it. We're going to start off with our favorite games of 28. We're going to start off with our favorite games of 2018. So, Clinton, start with Robin,
because okay, he's like the most, he has the most conviction about his choice.
Okay, Robin.
Yeah, it was very easy for me. It was God of War.
Why?
I think the approach to it, they kind of like really did a real, like, I wouldn't say 180, but they definitely shifted the kind of focus of the character a lot. The introducing of his son Atreus and the kind of building of this kind of new lore, taking it to the Norse mythology was great. And pretty much I struggled to find a flaw with it. The only thing that I wanted was actually more game to play.
Yeah. So I just want to ask you, the one flaw I've had people mention is the difficulty, because normal mode is too easy and then hard is too hard. So I don't know what you played it on and what your opinion on that is.
I played on hard and it was okay for me. But then again, I've been playing a lot of the God of War titles, so I'm quite familiar with
it. But that's another thing. This has a lot. The mechanics like almost aren't the same as past God of War. The past ones were relatively easy. You just hacked and slashed through the hundreds or dozens of enemies. But in this one, it's more deliberate.
Yeah, I think there's less of that kind of button mashing. Which I actually really liked. The fact that you can be a bit more, have a bit more tactic to kind of how you want to approach things, especially if you're going to get to the end of the game and you have to go and fight all the Valkyrie.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
That I agree.
Thanks, dude.
So many videos.
I've been avoiding this because I don't have a PlayStation yet, but it's fine.
It's not even a major spoiler though. Just wait.
It's a relative assumption anyway.
Yeah.
Given the like setting and everything.
That doesn't but I mean nothing is spoiled from that, because you find out about them quite early on. That there are Valkyries in the game. But I agree with you, Rob. I played God of War 1 and 2 back in the day, and I was not looking forward to this one at all. Like, it was so low on my radar, or this latest God of War. And then when it was released, I was like, oh my, I have to play this game.
Yeah, I think the community, there was a lot of kind of pressure to say, okay, they've kind of shifted so far from what the game used to be.
Yeah.
That people kind of were a bit worried about, can they keep it off? And, credit to the whole team there at Sony's studio.
Yeah. Santa Monica Studios. Yeah. It's really like I started playing it again at the weekend because I'm ahead of December. I want to sit down and finish The Witcher 3 from beginning to end, and the same with God of War. So that's one of my games that's going into the thing. So any extra? Who was your second runner-up for the year? What game did you hate?
Game did I hate? I hated... what was the game called? No. It was Metal Gear Survive.
Oh my god. Did you play that train wreck?
I played 2 hours.
I'm sorry you lost that time.
I contacted PR and said, listen,
I can't do this.
I'm not too sure I can play this game. I want to give it a couple more hours. But just to let you know, the review is not going to be good. And I played it and...
Yeah, that game was a trash fire from what I saw. I think Nick played it.
I think he did. I don't think he reviewed it either.
No, I think he did. He came onto the podcast and shouted about it, though, about how he was just poking people with a stick for hours. And
If I had paid money for that, I would have been really, really angry.
Yeah, that does not seem like a fun game. So, Clinton, are you going to go or can I go?
You can go, Brendan.
Okay. So, I think my favorite game of the year, this is really tough because it's between two games. The first is F1 2018.
Brendan's a sim guy now.
You can laugh at me.
I'm not laughing. It's just that you had like such an about turn on that game where you're like, what is this F1 nonsense?
I've always liked racing games.
But you fell into this one.
So F1, let me give you a bit of perspective. So F1 2017 or F1 2015 was free to play last year this time, at around about this time. So I picked it up. I started playing it. I played with friends and I was, all right, okay. So then picked up F1 2017 because it was on sale. And I was like, this is pretty good. I can play this game. I sucked about 70 hours or plowed 70 hours into that game. And then I heard 2018 was coming out. I was like, I could play that. Pre-ordered it, okay. And then proceeded to plow another 80.
That said, don't pre-order.
No, yes. But... Okay.
This is a special exception, though, because I knew what I was going to get. And Codemasters Formula One games are excellent in every way possible. So it's between F1 2018 and Assassin's Creed Odyssey. The reason I'm putting Assassin's Creed Odyssey out there is because initially I hated the game. Initially, it just beat me to death, and I did not like it at all. But after spending about 80 hours in ancient Greece with Cassandra and Ubisoft, it changed my mind, and it is a really, really spectacular game, especially if you did not like Assassin's Creed games. If you played something like Assassin's Creed Black Flag or Unity or any of the later Assassin's Creed games, and you haven't played Origins or Odyssey, I highly recommend checking out Odyssey. It's kind of like the best of Origins. The combat is fantastic. The world is huge and so, so deep. Like, I literally mean deep, like in terms of height and depth and going below ground. The people that you meet, just some of the people that give you quests. I know a lot of people criticize this game at the beginning for having so many fetch quests and doing this and that, but they're framed in such a clever way. I mean, there's some instances where, like, you meet Oedipus and you meet, like, you hear about Hercules. There's so much attention that was put into this game. It's absolutely fantastic. So I think if I had to pick between the two, I would go with Assassin's Creed Odyssey because it's just fantastic. It's a really, really great experience. In terms of worst game, Fallout 76. I'm not saying any more about that.
Yeah, Brendan's talk. Okay, so before I tell you mine, I just want to preface this with saying I didn't play that many games this year. I've just got a lot less free time because I'm doing school and work full time, doing both.
Excuses.
Of those. Yeah, excuses not to play video games instead of the other way around. So this might be a little bit predictable, but Dead Cells was probably my game of the year. And again, I'm saying that with the knowledge that I haven't played most of the stuff that came out this year. I've been following that game since it launched in Early Access. I buy and play almost every game that comes out as a roguelike. And that one was fantastic. It's not the best roguelike for those elements, but it has some of the best combat that I've seen in any game, not just a roguelike.
Mm.
It has maybe the best 2D side-scrolling action ever in any game ever released. It's that good.
Until we see that game that was announced at E3 earlier this year.
What
the
game?
Dude skateboarding, shooting people with the...
My friend Pedro.
That's it.
I've also been following that game for a long time. So... It was worth the wait. I didn't buy it in early access because I've done this before with some roguelikes. So you kind of get burnt out before the game releases.
Yeah.
And then they put out new content and then you don't want to play the new content because you're already burnt out. So I waited for the game. I got it at release. I finished it and I'm very happy with it. I just have some problems with how they do leveling and advancement and how you go on. You know, the whole point of roguelikes is you usually beat the final boss and then like, I want to play it again. It just has some problems with pacing and the longer it runs or take too long and it gets too punishing, but they're always changing the game. Like in early access, they release their stuff into alpha where people are really into it, can play it and get to know it, and then they make changes. But for the base game, for someone like me, it was fantastic. I think I put 20 hours or so into it, and I think I got my full and my money's worth. I might go back if they release DLC. But yeah, I encourage anyone, even if you don't like roguelikes, to give that a try because the combat is that good. But it, if we're talking about how long we played games, I'm still playing Into the Gungeon. That's still my, like, my evergreen title. I still play that like at least once a week. I don't play it daily anymore. Once a week, it was fantastic. I don't really have a worse game because I didn't play that many. So anything...
Well, you're lucky.
Yeah. If I say it's my worst, it won't be my worst. It will be my least favorite. So okay. I really recommend that. Still try Into the Gungeon. It's still such a good game.
Cool. Right. So on to news.
Yeah, some...
News stories. So, I mean, technically we are a tech site, but, I mean, we read the news.
Yeah.
I read news. What do you think I do in my free time? Anyway, so this year there was no... There was actually a shortage. We didn't have... Oh, no. Hang on. Sorry, I'm thinking about the 1st of January, and I'm remembering now that things just went bad from the beginning. So at the beginning of the year, we kicked things off with Logan Paul... posting a video of him in
the... Why did you have to
bring it up? Because we have to remember it.
He's like the boogeyman. He's one of those. He's one of those people who's like the boogeyman.
He didn't disappear. They released the thinning even. So, like, whatever. So, you, Logan Paul filmed inside the Japanese suicide forest, the Aokigahara Forest in Japan, that's at the foot of Mount Fuji. He was banned, well, not banned from YouTube. There was a mess.
He got a slap on the wrist.
Yeah, pretty much. Slap on the wrist. And yeah, I mean, it just went downhill from there, really.
Yeah, stuff's been going real wild. It's become the Onion. The Onion is going to go out of business soon because, like, everything that happens in real life just is the same as Onion stories, and you can't tell the difference anymore.
So, Robin, what was your favorite or least favorite
news? Yeah, it wasn't a favorite story. I wouldn't say favorite or least favorite. It was just perhaps my most shocking story of the year.
Yeah.
Which was the death of Saudi Arabian journalist Jamal Khashoggi.
It's more like the assassination of...
Well, we can't say assassination, can we?
Well, the kind of when the video came out, and in light of pressure from a bunch of news organizations and governments from across the world, the Saudi Arabian government eventually said that he was murdered.
Mm.
But we still don't have answers.
Yeah, they
that's
keep,
probably the most frightening part.
They keep eking out little details, and it's more shocking every time.
Yeah, so for people that perhaps have been under a rock or have chosen not to kind of
follow the news,
which I don't blame you for.
Yeah, it's scary out there.
Yeah, so Khashoggi, he wasn't really an outspoken journalist in Saudi Arabia. He was very much pro-government, but he said, I think, a few things that had angered some people.
Yeah.
And he was inside. He was in Turkey at the time, along with his, I believe it was his wife or girlfriend. And what happened was he went to the Saudi Arabian consulate in Turkey, in Istanbul, and she was sitting inside the car waiting for him to come out again.
Mm-hmm.
And he did not.
For hours. How long? It was like 12 hours. He was apparently
was
in there.
It was a long time. And I mean... video shows a group of men entering the consulate as well, and
tourists.
Yeah, the details about how he died are quite shocking as well. I don't want to get into the details because it gets quite grotesque.
Yeah, but there's a bone saw involved, and I'm not saying that to be funny. There was a literal bone saw, and it's real grisly.
Yeah, so I mean, perhaps the most shocking part of the story for me is that the fact that the Saudi Arabian government still hasn't been held accountable.
And the other shocking thing is who's going to hold them accountable?
Because
what,
oil.
What's going? Yeah, because oil, and they buy lots of things.
I think who is it? Hasan Minhaj.
Yeah.
On there is, I think it is on YouTube as well. We'll link to it, but I highly recommend if you're on Netflix to go and watch Patriot Act,
which is very good too.
Hasan Minhaj's comedy news show, current affairs, but he does it really well.
It's really good.
Yeah, I think he's probably one of the best, probably better than John Oliver. Don't hold me to that though.
Ooh.
Don't hold me that.
It's because John Oliver did the Fortnite dance. You've lost all credit. I hope you got paid well, John.
And you are nothing in our eyes.
Trevor Noah, I hope they just paid you, even though neither of you need the money. I hope they paid you well for that nonsense.
But anyway, he did a really good piece on what's his name? MBS.
The Crown Prince.
Yeah, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. I can't remember his name now. I just now know him as MBS. That's what I've just been calling him for months. Like you say,
Mohammed
Robin,
bin Salman.
There we go. like you said, I think the most shocking part for me about this whole story is how nobody's done anything to Saudi Arabia. There's no repercussions.
Yeah, again, there's oil, right? Well, it's not even oil. Some of the countries that aren't getting the oil, they need Saudi Arabia to buy stuff from them. And there's no, like, what's the UN? What are they going to do? Like, who is going to do what is the problem?
Yeah, I think what's also quite telling is the fact that it was a Saudi Arabian journalist. I think had this been a US or a British journalist, the story would have been far different.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I don't want to play that card, but I
reckon... No, we're in agreement on that.
Yeah, I as much as I don't want to agree with you, Robin, I can absolutely see how that would have been the case. It's a bad situation.
And not to get like inside baseball, it's frightening. Okay, so it's frightening for us because listen, we're not the same. I don't even like calling myself a journalist sometimes. I like to just say I'm a staff writer. Because I don't do stuff that's dangerous like he does.
Yeah.
I'm not going to riots and taking pictures. I'm not doing that stuff. I'm more of a staff writer.
He wasn't really doing that much. He wasn't like, you know, hard hitting investigative law or like going into war zones and stuff. He was just like a normal journalist.
Yeah.
And it was crazy.
And yeah, that's why I'm saying it's scary for us. Who we can be considered journalists, but depending on who you ask and how we want to label ourselves. Because the thought of living in a country where that can happen to you freaks me out beyond belief. And it's not even that. It's like you could visit one of those countries and they could just like pick you off the street. I mean, that could happen in South Africa. I could walk on the street and get shot as well. But it's just, it's people who want to be outspoken about their beliefs have always been preyed upon. But if that's your profession, then it's even more so. And it's just been, scary as hell. I'm not afraid to say... myself, it's been scary as this unfails.
What's most telling is the fact that the term like fake news gets and journalists are seen as an enemy.
Yeah,
and this kind of shows that it's a real possibility.
Well, I mean, just look at what happened in the States with CNN, who had a bomb delivered it to their premises or the headquarters.
You got the president of the country calling them fake news.
And I mean, it's dangerous times to be calling yourself a journalist or part of the media.
Yeah, well, when I went to the US, I didn't throw that term around.
Yeah, no. What are you? I'm a cleaner. I do.
I'm a content creator.
Yeah.
I think that's the safest thing. Even though some people raise their nose, at least they won't want to kill you.
Yeah,
jeez,
exactly.
She's flipping 2018, dude. That's the flipping current year, right?
I guess that's my... probably most shocking,
Brendan.
So this one is easy. I mean, last year it was Uber. This year it's Facebook. So in case you don't know what happened earlier this year, Facebook and the Cambridge Analytica scandal. So what happened was Cambridge Analytica had gathered some information from Facebook users. As far as I remember, they had gathered information from Facebook users and then used that information long after the period that they were allowed to be making use of it with Facebook. So let's start at the beginning. So if you are a company, you can sign an agreement with Facebook to use data, anonymized data, I would hope, of its users to kind of direct ads towards people. With the agreement being that once your agreement with Facebook is over, you must delete that data, hand it back over, that sort of stuff. So Cambridge Analytica had a deal with Facebook in that regard, so all above board. But then it came out that Cambridge Analytica had not deleted the data of the users. So it was using that data to sell advertising to anybody, really, but the majority of sales was to political campaigns. And this came out and people were like, what the hell, Facebook? What are you doing? And Facebook was like, well, it's not our responsibility. They're supposed to follow the rules. And everybody was like, no, Facebook, that's not how it goes. You must protect us. And it became this whole big thing. So Cambridge Analytica filed for bankruptcy. They no longer exist, I would assume.
I wouldn't be surprised if they've been respun into a different...
So the big thing to note, however...
All the C-levels got paid out too, probably.
So there was another company called SCL Elections So here's what the CEO of Cambridge Analytica said. I'm so sorry that in 2014, SCL Elections, which is an affiliate of Cambridge Analytica, licensed Facebook data and derivatives from a research company, GSR, that had not received consent from most respondents. The company believed that the data had been obtained in line with Facebook's terms of service and data protection laws, wrote Taylor. So that was the CEO, who is Dr. Alexander Taylor. But I just want to go back because there was Facebook was actually fined for this, but you are not going to believe how big the fine was. It was a tiny, tiny amount.
So before you announced that amount, but this was before the new what's the
GDPR?
EOs?
Yeah,
so
that was data protection.
That was before you could really get hammered in Europe.
I don't know why they didn't just wait.
Well, so because the event occurred
before the law, yeah. And you can't retroactively charge people.
Lucky bastards.
Yeah. So Facebook only paid £500,000 in a fine for this Cambridge Analytica, for its role in the Cambridge Analytica scandal. To give you an idea, at the time, this was in July. Facebook made that amount every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
5.5 minutes, sorry.
It's like less than a slap on the wrist.
Yes.
Because I think a slap on the wrist hurts you for more than 5 minutes.
So, I mean, that was the first thing. And then this whole situation devolved even further as the year went on. We had Mark Zuckerberg appearing before the Senate with people asking them, how does Facebook make money?
Yeah, it was just like a tech support session.
Yeah.
Mark,
that's what it was.
The robot caller, Mark Zuckerberg, is interviewed by several old people.
Yeah, I mean,
he drinks water in a strange way. And I can have my team get back to you on that.
It's just, I found that bizarre. Like, you're the house and you don't know how these things work. I don't get it. Yeah, and then the hitch just kept on coming. Facebook declared a breach of its service a little bit earlier this year, where its view as feature had a bug that would allow people to log into your profile and see personal data. It was just not a good year for Facebook. And then also the Myanmar situation. They got ruled out. They got ruled by, on that. Yeah, so it was not a good year for Zuckerberg and pals. So yeah, they are my newsmaker of the year. Not good news, but not very good.
What shocks
good.
Me is kind of Facebook's position on this whole thing. I was able to sit in on a local Facebook event where they kind of, the focus was discussing fact checking, and they partnered with Africa Check.
Yeah,
and that's great and everything. But one of the kind of talking points was kind of Facebook's role as a arbiter of truth. And they don't see themselves as that, which I find very hard to understand, because Facebook is essentially a news source. People are getting news, and it should be Facebook's role to actually ensure that the right news, the correct news, is getting out there.
I mean, it would be like us saying, well, anybody can write on our website, and whatever they write, we're not responsible for.
True.
But you're using our platform to spread misinformation. I mean, we should be able to say no, like, we don't accept that. I don't understand why Facebook has taken such a, we are not a publisher, but I can actually understand why, because that comes with certain rules. And
if that's the case, then remove the newsfeed.
Yeah, remove the newsfeed altogether. All I want to see is photos of dogs. I'm happy with that. If I can just have pictures of dogs and animals on my Facebook feed that are not in pain, that would be great. But unfortunately, that's not how the world works. Everybody wants to use the social media to share the narrative that they have.
I mean, it's the one way. I'm sure there's like a scientific name for this, but everyone wants to hear what they want to hear, and then they don't hear what, you know, an echo chamber or something like that. They want their opinion to be the dominant one, and they want other opinions to be shut out, and they will always go to the platform holder and say, you should do that for me.
Yeah.
And yeah, because we're getting into an age where everything's on the internet, those opinions are becoming stronger, and it's a whole thing. People have written lots of stuff about this.
Yeah. So let's not get it too much into it. Facebook was my newsmaker of the year.
I have a similar train wreck for mine. It's not my favorite, but
it's getting very depressing.
Yeah. This isn't so depressing, because I don't think anyone who is affected lost a maximum of $200. So I think it's better. This is Bethesda and Fallout 76.
Oh!
And So I have not played this game. So Brendan has, so he's more exacerbated. This has been my favorite of the year, my pick, because it's been, it's a bit mean of me to say, but because it's been entertaining. It's been an entertaining train wreck to watch. So the game launched and it was bad and it was rushed and that was kind of expected and people demanding refunds and everything. That was expected, but it's the stuff that kept happening afterwards that made it worse and worse. And my favorite thing that happened was the canvas bag scandal.
Oh.
So I'm not going to go into everything bad that happened with Fallout 76. I just want to talk about this one specific point. It was like the culmination and it's actually still ongoing. So there was a $200, and if you were living in a country like South Africa, it was even more than that on top of the converted into our currency. There was a premium on top of that. It was very expensive. It was a collector's edition called the Power Arm Edition. The big ticket item, which wasn't the thing people had problems with, was a Power Arm helmet, which had a working light and I think one or two other things. That was kind of fine. Some people called it a bit cheap, even though the last one they did, the Pip-Boy, was like that. The problem was the bag you were supposed to put the helmet in. It was promised on the page and on the pictures that are still going around, a Westech canvas bag, carrying bag. And when people got it, they found out it was an extremely cheap nylon bag instead, to the point where...
I don't even think you could call it nylon, though.
It looked like a trash bag.
Yeah.
Trash.
It was so thin.
It was thin, and because it was in a package, it was all crinkled, and you couldn't get the crinkles out, and it looked terrible, and it obviously was a cheap replacement for canvas. Somebody made a post on Reddit saying they spoke to the store support, because I think they bought it directly from Bethesda. And the agent on the other side said, oh, yeah, I'm paraphrasing. Oh, yeah, that was just made for the media to kind of look nice. We tried to make it. We found out it was too expensive, so we went with nylon. We don't intend to do anything about it. So at that point, they took all the screenshots. They put it on Reddit. Some people are like, this is ridiculous. There's no way they would say that. But it was confirmed that Bethesda, an official employee of Bethesda eventually said, oh, it was a third party, because that's the only excuse. We outsource this stuff. It's not our fault. But at that point, an official representative of Bethesda did say that. That is confirmed for the record, okay, that they did say, we don't intend to do anything about this. Bethesda's first remedy was to give you 500 atoms. Now, I don't mean actual atoms, though I think those would have been more valuable. So in Fallout 76, the premium microtransaction currency is called atoms. $500 is worth, 500 atoms is worth an amazing $5 value. Now, when I ran the story, I had to be careful because I put $5 in the headline, but it's not like they were mailing you a $5 bill. No, no, no. They weren't going to EFT you $5 either. You were getting $5 worth of some bupkis currency. Bupkis currency that you could only use in their game and nowhere else. So they were kind of benefiting themselves because you were going to now spend more time in the game using that currency.
Also, sorry, can I interject here and say that 500 atoms could get you...
No. I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
I'm going to get to that. That's the next step. That's hilarious.
Okay.
So aside from it keeping... Why didn't they give everyone 1,000 atoms? Why didn't they give everyone 5,000 atoms? It would be literally zero cost to them because
it would be cost them because they would have to give you free cosmetic items in their game.
So here's what Brendan wanted to mention. In the game, right, there is a skin that of a male man who has a canvas bag, and 500 atoms is not enough to afford the skin. That skin is about 750 atoms. It is like just a little bit too little.
You could literally, with that 500 atoms, you could get yourself a paint job for your pit boy. But it had to be, two colors. There's red and blue, and then there's another one that costs like 1,000 atoms.
Yeah.
Or you could get yourself a poster for your place.
Yeah, it was
not a real poster, like a poster for your camp.
It was a slap in the face to the most loyal customers who put their faith into a pre-order of a collector's edition. They just got slapped in the face. Then recently, they announced that they were going to make the canvas bags.
Oh, boy.
And if you need to email their support with your proof of purchase, and they're going to send that sometime. We don't have an ETA on when the canvas bags are coming out. But here's the thing, right? If this was happening to any other game, if this was happening to a game which people actually liked and were enjoying, this wouldn't be a thing. Maybe one or two people would have complained and they would have gotten the actual canvas bag. It would have been a mild controversy at best. But because Bethesda has eroded so much goodwill with the release of Fallout 76 and all the mistakes they keep making in this train wreck, this was like the straw that broke the camel's back. And a lot of people were saying a class action lawsuit was ramping up because, okay, I'm not a lawyer. it seems to be false advertising. I don't want to say it's outright false advertising because I could get arrested for perjury or something. It seems like it's false advertising. If you go look on the official, I wrote about the story about the collector's edition. I remember the marketing material I got said canvas, and it wasn't canvas in quotation marks. It didn't say canvas-like material. It said canvas bag. And a lot of the listings, like on Amazon, still say canvas. They don't say nylon. They don't say canvas-like material. They say canvas Westech carry bag. So that was just one of the things. This is like an ongoing train wreck. Yeah, Fallout 76 was my choice, not because it was the best, but because through my masochistic eyes, it was the funniest. And I like when big companies get put in check, and I like that people are going to be more savvy with their money when they come out with, I don't know, Starfield or the next Elder Scrolls. I'm just disappointed now. I don't want to give ZeniMax Media and Bethesda my money for Doom 2, especially because it's probably going to be on their proprietary launch on PC. I don't know. I might not just buy that game, even though Doom 2016 is one of my all-time favorite games.
I'm definitely waiting for reviews.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm stealing your job now to bring on the next segment. Yes. Let's talk about movies.
Hang on. Do you want to do yours first, and then you can duck out?
Okay, that would be good. Cool. Okay, so I'm also bringing it up because I want to go first because I'm so on the fence. So we have to choose our best stuff of this year. Which is going to be difficult for me because one of the movies that came out this year may be my favorite movie of all time, but it's not my favorite movie of this year. So let me explain. So my three choices here, I'll give you a proper one, are Avengers Infinity War, Mission Impossible. No, Mission Impossible Fallout.
Okay.
And then Isle of Dogs. So Infinity War is going to be my choice. I won't like tease you any more than that. It's probably going to be my choice because it was an experience. And the other
hashtag Thanos did nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Thanos was right.
No other movie had the effect it had on me. And then I also had like a unique viewing of it where I took my nephew. And then at the end of the movie, he said, "Is the movie over?" I said, "Yeah." And he said, "But it can't be over. The good guy's lost." So I could see my nephew's 8 and he lost like a piece of his innocence that day. And that to me is just hilarious. I sound like such a bad person, like reveling
in other people's pain. Well, I just laughed out loud when he... The good people lost, and I just laughed.
Man, I did laugh in the movie theater, and people were so silent at the end of the movie, and I was cracking up. Because of that, and also because I've been watching this stuff since 2008 when Iron Man came out. I've been in this since the beginning.
I think we all have, man.
Yeah, and it was like such a payoff. The Russo brothers kind of like threaded the needle, right?
Yeah.
They maybe didn't make the best movie, but they made the best Avengers Infinity War that they could have done.
I agree with you.
So that's why it's my favorite of this year, but I think of next year or of all time, Isle of Dogs is probably one of my favorite movies ever.
Okay.
And just it's so good. The animation, the writing, the music in Isle of Dogs. I don't know if you guys have watched it or trailer or anything.
I've seen it,
yeah. It's a Wes Anderson animated movie, and it's just superb.
Animated Wes at? Okay, now you sold me.
Have you watched The Fantastic Mr. Fox?
No.
Okay. Well, if you watch a trailer, it's a very similar animation process, but I think the animation in Isle of Dogs is also much better. It's set in Japan, which is like, I've been infatuated with Japan all my life. I love dogs, obviously.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil this movie. I want to say watch one trailer and then just watch the movie. I think it's out. It's definitely out on DVD and Blu-ray right now. You can get it everywhere. Cool. I went into it almost completely blind and I was blown away. So that's why I'm a bit torn up.
Okay. Because
Avengers is going to be my favorite of this year, but I think Isle of Dogs is a better movie.
Over a longer period of time.
Yeah, and Infinity War also, I think it loses a lot in subsequent viewings.
Yes.
Because I think one of the huge things about Infinity War is it just smacked you. It said... I don't want to spoil it,
I hear what you're saying.
It loses a lot when you lose that element of surprise. Yeah. And also because it was a payoff. It was a release of those 10 years of going.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not the same the second time. And then I also wanted to mention Mission Impossible Fallout because it was just a phenomenal movie. And also I viewed it in the new Metro. I can't remember the name of it, but it's
4D, wasn't it?
I think it's 4DX or something 4DX. Like that.
Oh, it's terrible seats.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I watched the first experience I had with it's moving seats. They've also got flashing lights, which are extremely irritating. They've also got water that sprays at you and then air that smells, right? And I thought it was a complete gimmick. I saw Deadpool 2, and it actively made Deadpool 2 a worse movie. Every time there was a gunfight, the lights flashed, and I got a migraine. The seat moves were so jarring and everything, and I thought never again. But then I went again. I got invited, and I thought, you know what? I want to see Mission Impossible. I'll go see it, even if it detracts. And that made it, not 10 times, it's all hyperbolic, it made it a much better experience. I don't know if you guys have seen any of the like modern Mission Impossible movies.
No, I was thinking of watching it at home this holiday on my TV with Brendan. Motion blurring turned off.
No, but listen, okay, so look up a trailer. That, like Tom Cruise should die every 10 minutes in that movie, but he doesn't, because things are so bombastic and things are moving around, and it lends itself to the technology that they've put in those theaters.
Okay.
There's a scene that shows a bit in the trailer with a helicopter crash. And I mean, that's not a spoiler. There's going to be a helicopter crash. And being in the seats during that scene was, I'll never forget that. That was such, even if I forget the rest of
that's
the movie.
That's pretty impressive.
Remembering that helicopter crash in those seats where it's like swinging you around and the lights are bright and it's disorientating as it should be, but it's not obnoxious like it was in Deadpool. It was such a good experience, and I'm really sad it went off the circuit before I could go watch it again. And I really don't like watching movies again, no matter how good they are. I'm just not the kind of person, I'm like one and done. But I really wanted to watch that again, and I didn't get the chance. And I'm going to regret it, because I'm never going to be able to have that experience again. But maybe that's what makes it so good. So those are my three picks. Infinity War is my choice for this year, but I think Isle of Dogs is a better movie overall, and it will be it won't be remembered as much as Infinity War because Marvel. But I think that's a better movie overall, and I'll be watching that again. And Mission Impossible Fallout is a phenomenal action movie that was elevated beyond a normal movie because I got to see it like that.
And because there wasn't motion blurring on the screen.
I didn't notice that. Maybe it's because it was like 3D and everything. But Robin, what was your choice for movie?
Yeah, so I don't have a best movie of 2018. Maybe nothing really made a great impression on me. I obviously enjoyed Infinity War, like Clint says, but and Isle of Dogs actually, very good movie. But the movie that made the biggest impression on me was, because it's so terrible, that was the Venom movie.
The Venom movie?
Yeah.
So now that's interesting, because I've heard now two different camps now, because I've heard people that loved it as a campy B-grade superhero movie, and then some people that disliked it for exactly those reasons. So why did you hate it?
Well, my kind of issue was it wasn't what was advertised. You know,
okay.
Kind of building up to the before the trailers came out and everything, it was kind of billed as to be almost like a horror kind of vibe to it. And I really liked the casting of Tom Hardy. I thought it would have been great for the role of Eddie Brock.
Yeah.
When the first trailer came out, I thought, okay, fine, it doesn't look what I was expecting, but you know, maybe it's just a trailer. Let's see what it is in the movies. And when I got into the film and I was watching it, it was just horrible, man. For one, I don't think from a canon perspective it's very good. It doesn't really stick to what I understand from the symbiotes and kind of Venom and his character and everything like that.
Yeah.
The CGI was bad at parts, really bad at some parts. Specifically where you kind of see Eddie's face changing and, you know, he grows fangs for teeth and his eyes bulge out and things like that. That doesn't seem accurate in terms of the Venom kind of lore as far as I understand from the comic books. The acting was also terrible. Like, Tom Hardy is an Oscar-nominated actor.
And he's putting this out. Yeah.
And it was just really weird. The main villain in the film was also substandard. Michelle Williams, who plays, the love interest for some reason, she was also terrible. It was just
bad.
Poorly executed in most respects.
So do you think this is a problem with Sony having the rights to that IP? Or do you think that it's just a matter of not being able to translate? Or was it a director misstep? What do you think was the problem there?
I think it has to do with perhaps the team that's behind producing the film. Like, I mean, Sony has had a few hits, and I'm referencing now something from the Spider-Man kind of universe. I recently went to go watch Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, the animated film that's going to come out, I think, 21st of December. I went to a kind of a pre-screening of it, and that was incredible. And I think it has to do with the fact that about the talent that's behind it, like who's actually producing this, who's making the film.
Yeah.
And I think on Venom they got it wrong.
Yeah.
It also seemed really rushed to me. Like, I think probably
in terms of the CGI or not, just not in terms of the movie,
just to get in the mood, they wanted to get the movie out as quick as possible. It seemed.
I hear you. There's, yeah, I hate it when you get that feeling from a movie where it's like, oh, we just needed to finish it, so we just slapped this together, put in a villain here, and then went bananas.
Yeah, like I'm not an expert on kind of Marvel canon, but to me, this doesn't resemble any kind of version of Venom that I know from the comic books.
It's just from what I've seen, because I haven't watched the movie yet. But from what I'm seeing from people is that it's just like. It's not that it's horrible. It's just that it's like there's certain aspects of it that are really bad and really poorly executed. And then that just comes together. And if you can look over those things, I think, then people can enjoy the movie. But I don't think that it's a case of, oh, if you loved Venom from X game or whatever, like from whichever kind of medium you prefer, I don't think you're going to enjoy this.
Yeah, I think the worst part about it for me is the fact that because this was so poorly executed, it's probably worsening the chances of there being a sequel or like a whole kind of symbiote universe, as it were.
What I found interesting, though, is that the movie did really well overseas, like outside of the US, is right, what I mean. Right. Apparently, it did really well in China and in a couple of other territories. So it might get a sequel based purely on that.
Pacific Rim kind of situation.
That had a sequel this year. That was going to actually be my worst movie of the year because that was really disappointing.
Because
it took itself way too seriously. Like what I loved about the first Pacific Rim was how just bizarre it was. And we're just going to have robots fighting aliens, man. And then there's a love story. Yeah, it's right at the end, but they don't really like.
Well, I think that kind of speaks to the point of talent. When you have like Guillermo del Toro behind the film,
yes,
it's going to be good.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I loved about that was like he was behind that. And the first film was really good. Even though it was a mindless action film, it was a well-done mindless action film. And then the second one was like, oh, let's weave in a story about this person. And let's weave in a story about... No, that's not what I wanted to see. I want to see robots fighting aliens, bro. That's all I want to see, man. And yeah, I think like it sounds like Venom had the same sort of issue where it was like, oh, we want to do this and this and this and this and this. We don't have time. Let's just put out this first movie and then maybe we'll get a second one.
Yeah. The problem for me was, like I said, it wasn't what was advertised. If it was like kind of horror style and it was just a bad horror, I'll say fine, fair. You guys can execute. But this is not what you told me it was going to be.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's PG-13 and not R-rated.
Yeah, was also for a Venom movie. Yeah.
So, and also, if you haven't seen the movie and for some reason you choose to, there's a particularly great end credit scene.
Yeah.
Which probably involves perhaps the worst wig I've ever seen in movie history.
Wow.
And I advise you just to watch the movie just for the end credit scene because it's so terrible. So terrible, it's good.
That's amazing. Yeah, cool. Venom. Shame. I feel bad for him. And especially in a year where we've had such strong superhero movies. You know, we had Black Panther, we had Avengers Infinity War, and then we also had Spider-Man Homecoming. Wasn't that this year or was that last year?
Spider-Man Homecoming.
I think that was last year. Yeah, I think it was last year.
But yeah, I think if anything, it probably strengthens the case for Marvel Studios to just handle all the Marvel films.
Yeah.
And Sony just needs to say, you know what,
guys, absolutely. So I'm going to talk about mine because I actually just saw this one. I was going to go with now I can't remember the name of the movie. Black Panther.
Yeah.
I was going to go with Black Panther, but I realized that I watched it a second time and I didn't really enjoy it too much. I found the whole build up to Killmonger arriving was a bit too slow. But anyway, so my film of this year is going to A Quiet Place. That was directed by John Krasinski, Jim from The Office fame. The reason that I hadn't remembered it is because it terrified the living bejesus out of me.
Were you scared of
it? Dude, I don't like being quiet, okay? So this whole thing of this movie sitting there and everybody's quiet and then there's like minimal talking, like that movie freaked me out so badly. I also think like I watched this after I watched... the one with Natalie Portman, Annihilation, which really I thought was weak. I found that movie really weak.
I found it overly complicated.
Yeah, it was way too complicated for what it was. Like, just tell us what's happening here and like be done with it. Don't like try and make some existential stuff. But what I really liked about The Quiet Place was that air of tension that it got across. I've watched a lot of horror movies in my life, but this was one of the first ones where I actually stood up afterwards and went, I didn't say anything that whole movie. I didn't even make a noise. Like, what the hell? Like, it just psychologically influenced me not to speak. Sure, it wasn't... I'm not saying it deserves Oscars or anything like that, but for me, it's one of the movies that I like. I think back to, and it stands out to me. Also, the opening scene with the kid and his freaking shuttle.
Let's not spoil it, but yeah,
it was amazing. Anyway, that was just it set the tone for the rest of the movie, I think. And
yeah, the kid's performance in particular is really good.
And John Krasinski, like, having only ever seen him in The Office and like some off Hollywood comedies, like straight to DVD comedies. Seeing him in a really serious role like this was fantastic, and he's a really good actor. Emily Blunt's performance was amazing as well. Like you said, the kids were wow. Like child, I don't know what it is with child actors, man, but they're getting so good all of a sudden. Like I watch Stranger Things and I get like jealous. Like this is a kid. I could do better than this kid. I can do better. No, I can't. I really can't. But yeah, I really enjoyed The Quiet Place. And then my disappointment was Pacific Rim Uprising. Like I said, I just wanted more robots fighting huge aliens. There were more robots, man.
But it wasn't done properly.
Yeah, it wasn't done properly. As I said to you guys beforehand, I don't watch a lot of movies. So like my opinion should be taken with a massive grain of salt. I enjoyed Bright. So that should tell you what my taste in movies is like. This year we had a number of good ones. I really didn't want to bring up Black Panther, though, because I think Chadwick and who was Chadwick Boseman that played T'Challa?
Prince T'Challa.
Yeah, I think he's so sick and tired of being asked to do the Wakanda Forever pose. Shame. that's just my for me. So Clinton was Infinity War. You were.
Well, I didn't have a great movie.
Movie. Just
my worst movie was Venom.
Was Venom, and then for myself, The Quiet Place. But I think that's going to do it for now. I think that's us for the year.
Yeah, that's a good way to end 2018.
I think so. So thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us for this year. We wish you a fantastic festive season with your family. Enjoy the kickoff to the new year. And we will be closed from the 21st that's of correct,
yeah,
December.
But there will be content.
There will be content coming out throughout the day. But just so you know, we are not in the office from the 21st. So if you have anything important, drop us a mail or just wait until the 7th of January. That's when we return. We will be back then and news will be firing off on the site as per regular from the 7th of January. But as I said, we will be out. There will be some activity on the site, but it will be very quiet. We're taking a bit of a break. Thank you so much for joining us this year. We hope to see you again in the new year. For myself, Brendan Lotz, thank you very much. And from Robin Chetty.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks, everyone. 2018 has been terrible, but hopefully 2019 is better.
Goodbye, everybody. I'm so glad 2018 is over. I'll see you in 2019. If you didn't agree with my picks, it's an opinion show, isn't it? See you next year, everybody.
Thanks so much, guys, and have a fantastic festive season. Bye.
Sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.